Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. I hope you're ready for this planting time. It's the time to do it. And it's just a beautiful time to get out and work in your yard. It's the time when so many things need to be planted. We came up with a list. If you missed the list, you call me back. Let's talk about some of the things you might want to grow in your yard. I love talking about peppers this time of year. I'm starting to miss the abundance of peppers that I had back in November. It's the hard part about December is you can kind of run out of peppers. And I have saved as many peppers as I could from the frost, but still they're not producing as well as I would like. I know there's a lot of those plants. And one of the cool things about the pepper we've been talking about, ahi, A-J-I, a lot of the ahi peppers, particularly if they're in the Bacatum group, will come back. So ahi omnicolor, I mean, I've had an ahi omnicolor come back in my garden every spring for years. It's really amazing how hardy they can be. But right now, it's kind of there ain't a lot of peppers being produced. So I'm thinking more and more about, boy, I'm ready to get my peppers going. And you should be too. It's the important time. It's the perfect time to think about peppers here along the Gulf Coast. So let's do that. Let's talk a little bit more about those peppers. A lot of people produce a pepper. A lot of places you can get a pepper called ahi dulce, A-J-I-D-U-L-C-E. Dulce means sweet. I think that is, dulce in this case, I don't know whether it's Portuguese or Italian or Spanish. I don't know. But it's one of those Latin origin words meaning sweet, ahi dulce. And there are a lot of different types out there. You'll find a Puerto Rican ahi dulce. You'll find ahi dulce type 1 and ahi dulce type 2. They're all really great. They're really wonderful. But if you see that ahi dulce, it's worth trying. The flavor and the aroma will just, it'll just knock your socks off. You won't believe it. It's not hot. It is a little spicy. Spicy is different than hot. How do I describe spicy? I mean, rosemary is spicy, but it's not hot in that kind of way. And that's the way these peppers are. They're spicy, but not hot. They have and the spiciness comes out often as a fruity or sweet aroma. Ahi dulce, great. A pepper that I didn't mention is ahi crystal. I've really come to appreciate it because it's so prolific, because it's so good fresh. I use it instead of jalapenos. They're a little hotter than jalapenos, but I like the flavor better, particularly in salsas. It's a great pepper in salsas, ahi crystal. And you don't have to wait for them to ripen, which is kind of nice. Just like jalapenos, you can eat them green, except in the case of ahi crystal, they're kind of a pale, almost translucent gold color, yellow gold, translucent pale yellow gold, really beautiful. They ripen to a deep red. When they're red, they have an entirely different flavor. And it's a really interesting flavor, really distinctive flavor. I think most people use them fresh, but you know, you can use them otherwise too. Somebody has sent me a picture. A neighbor was going to throw away a palm, so I had to move it into my yard. Move was done in a minute and was less than 50 feet. What do I do now? Yeah, so good question. I'm trying to see what kind of palm it is, but, you know, it looks like it's a, it could be a jelly palm, could be a date palm. I can't quite tell. I'll be honest. I think maybe it's a date palm, but it's fine. You know, find a place for it. Have you got it where you want it? Is that where you want it, Barry? If it is, you know, you've done it. Just make sure the soil is packed around there tightly. I think you've got it buried. If it's in the place, just make sure the soil is water the soil in very well, so that there are no air holes, no gaps. Palms like warm soil to develop the roots. And so you moved it a little bit early, but maybe you had to. And so we'll see how it does. It's probably not going to develop a lot of roots until a little bit later. Sometimes with palms, therefore, it's a good idea to cut off some of the foliage. And in this case, I'm going to think it's probably a good idea because it doesn't have much of a root system, probably won't have a root system for a while. I might cut back some of the foliage on that palm. And maybe this time of year it's a little less important. We'll see. But I think you've done okay, and I think it's probably going to do okay. But maybe watch that foliage. If you start to see a lot of drying out in the foliage, go ahead and start cutting some of it back. Send me a picture in a couple of weeks, and let's take a look at it and see how it's doing. And then let's decide, okay? Hey, Beverly, I'm listening. What's up?
Isn't it a gorgeous day?
It is. It is. It's absolutely, it's really wonderful. Yeah.
I have gardened for a long time, both flower gardening and vegetable gardening. And I usually buy the vegetable plants, you know, tomatoes and peppers and, you know, broccoli and all that. And I've tried seeds occasionally and have not had much success. And I was wondering, if I hang up, will you do a tutorial on seeds? I know some of them you're supposed to nick, some of them you're supposed to soak overnight, but some you can direct sow, and I'm just not having any luck with them. Can you just tell us highlights of what we should do with the seeds with different vegetables?
I'll be glad to. And let me tell you before you get off the phone, first off, you really shouldn't have to, except for nasturtiums. They're the only seeds that we've talked about today that you would have to do anything funky to. And I would get some nasturtiums if I were you, and you'll have to nick them, and you can take a little fingernail clippers, and you can just pinch off a little piece of them with fingernail clippers, or you can take a little fingernail file, and you can file it down just a little bit just so that it'll take in water, or you can leave them alone. Some people have great success, but if the nicking is worrying you, don't worry about it. You won't have to nick any of these seeds. They'll all take in water just fine. So, Beverly, I'm gonna talk to Bill first about cauliflower, and then I'm going to come back, okay, and we're going to talk about how to start each one of these by seeds.
Is oh, good. And whether or not you soak them and all, you know, all that.
Yeah, and I'm fixing to tell you, you don't have to do it to any of them. But we're gonna start from square one on growing these seeds we're talking about.
Oh, good. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Glad you called. Bye-bye. Good point. Let's talk about how to do these things in pots. We'll do that in just a minute. Bill, I'm listening. Ask me this question. It's a challenging question, but I'm listening.
My cauliflower, everything was going beautifully, and of course this freeze. Those heads have turned to mush. And I did cover them on the last few days, but it doesn't seem to do any good. The broccoli, just doing fabulously well. So once they get a little mushy, they're done, I would assume. Is that correct?
Cauliflower are hard. Cauliflowers are hard. Cauliflower is hard, I should say. It's just, uh-huh. It presents all kind of issues. But let me suggest this. Here's what I think happened with your cauliflower. And I'm not, there will be other problems that your cauliflower has, but here's what I think happened. Cauliflower is not as hardy as broccoli. It is much more sensitive to cold temperatures. I don't put it high on my list of things to grow. I've tried it several times with much anticipation and felt like in the end I had wasted my time. But I could be wrong, and maybe cauliflower is a really great thing for everybody to spend their time growing. And let's say it is. Here's what I think happened to your cauliflower. If the cloth that you cover them with sits on top of the flower and touches the flower, it's gonna burn that flower really badly.
Uh-huh.
So what you want to do is lift the cloth off the top of the flower next time you put it on there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that the cloth doesn't contact the flower. Is that possible that happened?
Well, actually, on these last 3 nights of cold, I used plastic and I elevated it up with some tall stakes to keep it, you know, pressing against the plant.
Yeah.
And but going through my first freeze, when I saw all that damage, and you said, don't worry about it, everything will come back fine. And right, everything did. But in an abundance of caution, I know we were going to get 3 nights of freeze. I did cover stuff.
Let me take a break. Let's take a break, Bill.
Broccoli and cauliflower and that stuff, I didn't cover that. And that's all doing well. But.
Yeah, we're going to come back. Bill, hold on.
Yeah.
Hold still.
Okay.
We're going to come back. Elton John's going to get tired of singing here. So we're going to let him sing just a little bit, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're coming back. And I'm going to deal with Bill's question, and we're going to get back to Beverly's questions about how to start these seeds.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Garden. Bill, let's and we kind of got interrupted by Elton John there a minute ago, and he's rude that way. And we didn't get finished with our conversation. You still there? We lose Bill? We may have. So cauliflower. Yeah, interesting thing. Much more sensitive to cold than broccoli. Needs a bit more protection. The heads, the foliage on cauliflower is perfectly hardy. The heads are very sensitive to cold and chilling, in my experience. And so, if anything touches those heads, if there's, during cold spell, you can cover lots of things. If you covered it with a blanket, you'd probably be okay, a pretty thick blanket. On the cold night, don't cover, and then you could put plastic over that if you like. But you really want to keep anything from touching the head, because if the head is very sensitive to cold, it loses heat rapidly when it touches something, and it turns to mush. Just a little thought. We always think, I'm as guilty of it as anybody. We're so addicted to the idea of thinking of covering plants as something like a greenhouse that we always put something like clear plastic over it, which transfers heat very well. A blanket can work just as well, or maybe even better. It doesn't transfer heat as well. That's why it's a blanket. You don't need sun going through it because it's night, right? It doesn't matter whether it's clear or not. So you could put a blanket and then put your sheet of plastic over it, and that'll probably help on the cauliflower. Now, am I going to tell you that life is a bowl of cherries or whatever it's supposed to be with cauliflower? No, because it's a pain. There are lots of things that go wrong with cauliflower. It's a very sensitive plant. Somebody was asking me and I'm going to talk about this real briefly because I can. Somebody asked me, what are the proper steps to get a date palm to produce fruit? And the first step, the first and most important step is to Man, I don't think you can avoid this step, really. If you really want fruit from your date palm, the first step is to move to California or move to Egypt. One or the other. In those cases, I think you stand a better chance of getting fruit from your date palm. You do not stand a good chance of getting fruit from your date palm if you stay in Mobile. Because date palms are really from very dry climates, and I suspect that it is a transition from very dry conditions to moist conditions that probably initiates flowering. The fruit develops in very dry conditions, which we never have here. And so even in South Florida, it's not really a matter of cold. It's really a matter of it's just too wet here. So they rarely develop fruit, even anywhere they're grown in a humid zone. But the palms can do okay. Some are better than others. The varieties that are commonly sold tend to do the worst. Wouldn't you know? It's probably because, you know, they come from California or whatever, and nobody thinks about growing plants for where we are. There are some varieties that are tolerant of humidity. Some of the date palms are tolerant. They're much harder to find. But getting fruit out of them, I can't tell you. There's not a good way to do it other than to move them to a climate where they really where they're better adapted, to be honest. They're not so well adapted, even the best of them, in a humid climate because they're from a very dry place. Hey, let's talk about Beverly's question about starting plants in pots, because it really isn't that hard. Beverly, the first thing is, with any of the plants we talked about planting in pots, tomatoes, peppers, bok choy, parsley, mustard, collards, broccoli, kale, lettuce, nasturtiums, petunias, none of those things that you start, let's start there. Let's pick one. Let's say you're going to try lettuce. Start with lettuce. It's very easy, really easy. Start with lettuce and tomatoes. Let's do those two. You don't have to do anything special to the seed. Nothing special at all. You just find a container, get good soil, and that can be a little tough, but we're just going to, you know, you're probably going to go to Home Depot and Lowe's and get whatever mess they've got there. If you can find it from your local garden center, you should do that. That's a better way of doing it. But none of it will be great potting, so it'll be okay. It'll work. It'll work just fine. Find you a container to put it in. It doesn't need to be a big container. You don't want a big one. You want to start small, and you're starting them inside so you can put them on your windowsill. So the containers could be, you know, as deep as your thumb. That's probably a good way to start. And they'll be, you know, the top will be maybe an inch and a half across. That's good, too. And put soil in there. And then put the seed in there. And don't put it too deep. None of these need to be set really deep. If you're starting with lettuce and tomatoes both, the seed needs to be pretty much on the surface. Just barely cover it. Barely cover it with a little bit extra soil. I mean, not even a quarter inch. And then keep it moist. And keep it a little bit warm. Both of them will appreciate being warm. Tomatoes will germinate with much warmer soil. They really prefer the temperature to be around 70 or 75. Lettuce will germinate between 60 and 70 degrees. So you may not even need inside. You probably don't even need to put any heat underneath the lettuce. But with the tomatoes, if the inside of your house is not warm, you might want to put a little heating mat underneath it. And then have some way you can water it from the bottom. I often recommend this. Not a big deal if you can't. But you'll have to put the pot in something that you can water so that the water doesn't drain out and get on the floor, right? But if you get a tray or something that you can fill it with warm water and let the plant soak that water up from the bottom, that's a little better too. And honestly, that's about it. I mean, there's a couple of tricks, you know, until the seeds germinate, you actually don't need a lot of sunlight. Doesn't matter. But once they germinate, once they're coming up, they need a lot of sunlight. So find a nice sunny window. If the temperature is warm outside, if it's in the 70s, put your plant outside on the porch. Let it grow on the porch. Let it have some sunlight on the porch during the day. And bring it in if it gets too cool at night. If it's lettuce, it's going to love staying outside anyway. So once that lettuce germinates inside, go ahead and put it outside on the porch. Does that help, Beverly? There's two things. But everything else, it's not with everything else I described. It's just as easy. The only difference I would say with that and say something like nasturtiums, with something with a really big seed, like nasturtium, is you want to put it a little deeper in the soil, just a bit deeper so that it's really covered better. They don't like sitting on the surface quite as much. They like to be completely covered. But most of the other things, bok choy and parsley, mustard, collards, broccoli, kale, lettuce, tomatoes, peppers, no need to plant those seeds too deeply in the pot. It's very simple. It's really simple. And mostly a matter of managing temperature and keeping them from getting too wet. But that's it. Bambula. Love this music. Classic Mobile music. You don't know that, but it was the rage in Mobile. Late 18th century. Not played on a piano, but played on drums. This is a New Orleans composer who captured the sound of the bambula on a piano in the mid-19th century. Louis Moreau Gotcha.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, if you if you're having to put a newspaper out and people are throwing a whole lot of stuff at you at once, which is what happens in the best of situations with newspapers, but it's gotten a lot worse because there aren't very many people putting out the newspaper anymore. And you don't have time to read the columns or even think about what you're doing, particularly if it's Christmas and you have a short span of time. And you know, you want to get back to your family, you want to do all those things, and you're having to write headlines on some stupid garden column by some idiot you don't even know, and you write a headline that has absolutely nothing to do with the story underneath it. That happens. And it happened this Sunday, did it not, Bill? And you know, you can't get too mad about it, because I'm not mad about it at all. It's too bad, but it's people survive, people live. It was about freeze resistance in plants, and we talked a lot about it, and it's a really thing. We've talked about that on this show before. I've tried to distill some of that information. A lot of things happen this time of year that make plants more freeze resistant, as we talked about with the cauliflower and the broccoli. That first freeze just sort of turns on some mechanisms. I used to say it was just sugars turning to starches, and in fact starches turning to sugars, and I still say that. And that's why vegetables taste sweeter after a frost. But there are a lot of other things going on, and I'm beginning to appreciate how many things change in a plant. Even hormones change. It's a weird thing. Some really important plant hormones change. So it's interesting, and that's begun to happen now. And so your plants are going to be a lot hardier. It's something you have to think about if you're starting plants inside, is that they have to become accustomed to that cold weather too. So the plants you start inside, you want to get them accustomed before putting them straight into the garden. You want to put them on the porch. We can talk about that when the time is right to put them out. So feel free to call me back, and we'll talk about it. Brian and Meredith, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill, can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
Hey, we got four goats for Christmas for our, we've got a child who's about to be three, and he's got a cousin who's about the same age. So, we put them down at Fowl River, built a little pen for them, and they're just sitting on kind of the whatever the native grass is down there. But we were thinking about planting some other grasses or anything really to help them eat down there. What would your preferred grass or plant be for them to eat and kind of move them around the farm at different times to find different spots?
Well, goats are browsers, and they're not they're not grazers so much as they are browsers. They're more like deer in that they eat a wide variety of things. And they're no matter what you plant for them, they'll probably eat something else. And it's just they kind of find their own way around. One of the reasons why goats are popular is because they really don't require a lot of planting, a lot of specific planting. I don't even know if you were to plant grass for goats, I don't know that it would make any difference to their diet. I will say this. There's probably no need to plant anything. I mean, it's just that simple. You want to keep them. The best thing to do, though, and the thing you always have to remember, is to keep them moving. If you put them in a place and let them eat everything out, they're not going to have anything left to eat. And it's going to take that area a long time to recover. So the real way to do grazing is to do it the old-fashioned way, the way animals have been doing it for a long time. That is to let them graze an area intensely for about a week and then make sure you move them to another place. So instead of worrying about what to plant, worry about how do I move the pen? How do I move my goats? And that's going to be the trick to make.
So right now we've got a semi-permanent setup for them. I think it's, 20 by 40-ish?
Yeah, for my goats? Yeah.
So it's about 20 by 40 and got metal poles on the ends to keep it up and then T-bars throughout for support. So it'd be tough to move that. Is there anything like the chicken coop or the chicken arch that you talk about that might work for a goat?
Yeah, I mean, I could easily see developing a very easily goat tractor to move them around. People tether goats. That's not at all hard to do, and they'll tether goats to a new area, move them to a new area. You can use electric fencing to keep them in. The problem with a 20 by 40 area is that the goats will eat. Here's what the goats are going to do. I mean, it makes perfect sense. They're going to eat out the things that they prefer the most. They're going to eat out the most desirable vegetation first. And then the least desirable vegetation is going to take over. You're going to end up with things like pigweed and things that are just virtually inedible because they've eaten everything out. And in that small a space, it won't have a chance to recover. So you could plant stuff, but they'll eat it out within a few days. They'll probably trample it to death. So one thing to do is think about having an area that is, cut that 20 by 40 area in half so that you can have them graze a 20 by 20 area and then move them to the 20 by 40, to the next 20 by 20 area. That'll help a little bit, but goats have got an appetite and they're gonna eat out whatever you plant in that area. So it's basically going to be a catch pen is what it ultimately comes to. And then you'll have to add food like hay and other things as time goes on. But the big thing is with goats, and it's just that simple, and with cows and everything else, sheep, is how do you keep them moving to a new place with fresh graze, get them to eat that out pretty well, get them to eat that down really well for 7 days, and then move them to another place. And it doesn't have to be a big place that you move them each time. So maybe you can tether them. Maybe you can put up an electric fence. But that's the trick. And am I just going on needlessly?
No, that makes a lot of sense. I got a lot of thinking that I need to do to make that a reality. But can I make a request?
Yes, sir.
Can you play some Goose Creek Symphony for my friend Barry on the way out?
Goose Creek Symphony, we'll try it.
Are you familiar with them?
We will. I don't, but we'll do what we can. We'll do what we can.
Okay.
Goose Creek Symphony. Great.
Thanks, Bill.
Great. Thank you. James, you there?
Yeah, sure am. Hey, I've got a few questions for you.
Yes, sir.
Well, first thing is, my wife is interested in the bags that you mentioned at the beginning of your show that you transplant with, and wants to know where you buy them.
I get them online, and honestly, you can go online and you can look for cloth planting bags, or several different names, but they have them online, and there are several places I get them online. I don't have a local place. There's not a local place where I can find them. And I'll try to find the official name for them. Here's some right here. Let's see what it says, if it has a special name on it. It doesn't have a special name on it, but you can get 500 bags, for $10, and that goes a long way. I'll find the specific thing, but you'll have to look them up on the internet, and they're all reliable. Every one that I've ever bought is reliable. I wouldn't get the largest sizes because they're just way too big. But, you start out with some of the smaller sizes to get your seed started. But I'll give you a good place to search. I'll give you a good search name for those. But cloth planting bags works. I know I've gotten there that way because it's the first word that comes into my head, and I've had to search for them before. But cloth planting bags probably works really well.
Okay.
Now, is that good? You were going to ask about heating pads too, right?
Correct. Even on the heating pads, are these specially made for seeding? And once again, is there a good place to get those if they are?
Yes. So that also is something I honestly get over the internet. You probably can find them at some of the local nurseries may have them. You'll get a size that fits your needs. I do find it's helpful if it has a thermostat, and you can buy a thermostat that's separate and you can control the temperature just a little bit. But even without it, you'll be fine. Just any of those heating pads, they go. There's a bunch of trade names, and they all seem to work pretty well. And
okay.
James was going to ask about, James was going to ask about peat moss too. We're going to come back from this break, and I'm going to kind of lay out a few things for James when we come back. Waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to the red dirt girls in a red dirt town, me and Lillian.
How do you do? Come on in, old friend. Know you're welcome in. Sit right down and we'll have a talk, and you can tell me what's on your mind.
Yeah, that's Goose Creek Symphony, folks.
Some people talk, but they don't know.
and
what'll they do when there really is a problem?
The corn won't grow, so rock and roll. We'll have to. the corn won't grow, so rock and roll. We'll have to play a little more of that. We'll find some better play. It might make a good little segue there. Thank you, Brian. Hey, James was asking me about cloth grow bags, and I'm going to give you a good search term for that just as soon as I can find it here. Fabric grow bags, that's another name. Grow containers. Let's see if we can find it that way. Yeah, I'm looking. Fabric pots, rooting pouches, fabric pouches for containers. That's what I'm using. We'll try to find that. Heating pads, a bunch of VivaSun is one name. They all work just fine. I've never found one that didn't work pretty much the way it was supposed to work. And they don't have to be real big. Some of them are bigger than others. Peat moss is interesting. You know, peat moss is probably okay for most seeds. Some seeds struggle in peat moss if the pH hasn't been raised enough. And peat moss is not a good something to grow plants off in the long term. For seedlings, it's probably okay. Probably okay in most instances. But it melts in our climate. It gets too warm. It just collapses. It gets too wet, too sticky, and it's not good for plants. So we recommend potting mixes that have a lot of pine bark in them, 70% pine bark. Even for starting seeds, I think it's preferable to have a lot of pine bark. And if you're going to grow anything off in a container for very long, you want pine bark because it drains better. It deals with our heat and our excess moisture much better than peat moss does. Just a thing. So 70% pine bark, 30% peat moss, kind of a standard mixture used here along the Gulf Coast by a lot of nurseries. The pine bark needs to be very small, smaller than your fingernail, particularly if you're going to use it for starting seeds. But and it needs to have some lime added to it. But a lot of the bags that you're buying at the big box stores and at most nurseries tend to have a lot of pine bark in them anyway. No need to get a bunch of crazy stuff like cow manure in there. You don't really want cow manure in any of your potting mixes. Just a lot of pine bark, really coarse. It doesn't really even need a lot of nutrients. It's probably better if it doesn't have a lot of fertilizer because you can add the fertilizer later with Miracle-Gro. And Beverly, if you get your plants up, just like I told you to do, you call me back once they get up and we can talk about the fertilizer once I know what you're going to be growing out. So try some of those. Start with the lettuce, Beverly. It's really easy, really easy. And start with the tomatoes. It's the time to do it. And once you get into it, it'll be so easy, you'll be amazed how easy it is to get those two started and going. And get them up, get them growing, and then we'll expand to other things, and we'll talk about how to feed them once I know what kind of soil you've used. We'll figure that out. We'll figure that out. What else have we missed? We catch up with all of our callers. We did. I'm going to go over. We have a few. I'm listening. They're coming in. Who's next up there? Tara, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, me, man. I'm so glad to see the sun coming back, and I hope everybody's
yes.
having great holidays.
Yeah.
So far, so good here. I got a couple of questions about the cloth bags. First of all, what kind of fabric are they made of? And what you said, that get the smallest ones. Are you talking about getting the seed starting size or a 1 gallon size? I mean, what do you mean by smaller or larger? And then I have another question about moving mulch if there's time.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing. There's a whole industry now that's built around producing cloth bags in many different sizes, and some of them are, you can get. In fact, I got a bag the other day, which I think I probably made a mistake. It was, gosh, I don't know how many gallons. It must have been 25 gallons of soil that could go into that pot. Yeah, and it's. Probably it may not be best adapted for that. May not be the best use of those pots, but it's okay. I use them a lot, particularly the 5 and 10 gallon sizes for growing out things like basil and other things that I want to put in pots, or if I've got some small citrus, or if I want to put a hibiscus, for example, and I have to move it around a lot because it doesn't want to get too cold, I'll put it in these cloth bags, and that way I don't have to move the whole big container, and the cloth bag doesn't carry a lot of weight. That's very nice. But what we're going to talk about right now are the smaller plants that we can plant seeds in, plant little seedlings in, and let's see what if I can find some names for them. I may have to do this next week, but I just generally go on the internet and find them.
The peppers and tomatoes, probably, huh?
Yeah. So here's what they call them: non-woven nursery bags, plant grow bags, fabric seedling bags. Fabric. Let's go with fabric seedling pots. That's probably going to be a way to do it. Fabric seedling pots, and you can get them so that Tara, you know, I'm just trying to. You can get them that they're about as long as your thumb, maybe a little longer, right?
Right.
And or you can get them that are twice as long as your thumb. up to 25 gallons of various kinds, but the little these non-woven, they're basically spunbond polyester or something.
That's the answer that I was hoping to get. That's the kind of fabric that you're talking about.
Yeah, and they're very easy, and the roots grow through them, so you don't even have to take them out of the pots, and so they're really good things. But there's a lot of them on here. So I'm going to go with, I don't really want to give a brand because a lot of these don't really have brands.
I'm wondering if you can make your own.
I don't have any idea how to make my own. I couldn't imagine how to make these.
Well, for one way, you might take an old sock.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think the sock would drain that well. That would be the problem.
Well, you cut would, it off the toes, Bill. Come on.
Right, where you got a lot of holes already. Oh, fiddle. Look at that. Tara, you got to take us out now. So we have reached the end of our show.
Harmonica.
Yeah, all right. Hey, we'll be back next week.